You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
And now a word from our sponsor, SpyCloud, the leader in operationalizing cybercrime analytics. Traditional threat intelligence is a thing of the past. Cyber criminals are stealing vast amounts of credentials, session cookies, and financial data every day, and it's hard to keep up. SpyCloud is the trusted partner businesses turn to fully understand their darknet exposure risk and neutralize threats before it's too late. SpyCloud alerts your organization as soon as an employee or customer's data appears on the darknet, so you can act faster than bad actors to prevent cyber attacks like ransomware, session hijacking, account takeover, and online fraud. With insights from the industry's largest repository of recaptured data, protect the digital identities and systems most important to your business. Get your free corporate darknet exposure report at spycloud.com/cyberwire and see what information criminals have in their hands today. That's spycloud.com/cyberwire.
Nation-state hacks or criminal capers? It's not always clear, and sometimes it's a distinction without a difference. But in any case, many call for international norms of cyber conflict. Rasputin and Zeus, waterholes and catfish. RSA is at its midpoint. We offer some of what we're hearing on the floor about false alarms, where to draw the perimeter, and concerns about the Internet of Things. I'm Dave Bittner, not as usual in Baltimore, but out here in the city by the other bay, San Francisco, covering RSA and offering your CyberWire summary for Wednesday, February 15th, 2017. Concerns about nation-state hacking continue to rise. Observers see signs that governments are making increased use of criminal gangs in operations those governments are directing, organizing, or inspiring. The activities of the Lazarus Group may provide a particularly interesting example. Whoever may be directing them, their crimes do seem to chime with the interests of one or two states. And the Internet is looking at you, Russia and North Korea. FireEye's Kevin Mandia counsels everyone not to expect any markedly reformed behavior from the Russian government. In this regard, observers continue to mull Microsoft's call for international norms that would govern conflict in cyberspace. They might bear comparison with those implied by the new edition of the Talon Manual. Booz Allen Hamilton's Cyber Foresight has an interesting account of the malware used in the watering hole attacks on Polish banks and other financial institutions. Cyber Foresight notes with commendable caution that it's too early for attribution. Polish media initially called it a Russian attack. That's unclear. There are equally compelling signs of purely criminal activity, although here again it's worth recalling the degree to which in many parts of the world there's significant interpenetration among security services and criminal organizations. There are, of course, more familiar banking threats, as might be expected, out in the wild. A new variant of the Zeus Trojan is out and about. The security firm Dr. Webb is tracking it, and it seems only fair for all the stick Russian institutions attract in the security space to mention that Dr. Webb is a Russian company doing some good work on the threat front. Journalists and activists interested in Gulf region migrant worker issues appear, according to Bleeping Computer, to be receiving the ministrations of an as-yet unattributed cyber espionage campaign. That campaign seems to feature catfishing organized around the social media profiles of an apparent young woman known as Safina Malik, evidently the Robin Sage of this particular effort. The campaign involves long-term cultivation of targets with the eventual goal of inducing them to visit a watering hole site disguised as a Google login page, whence the victim's credentials are extracted. As is traditional in recruiting for espionage, the catfish, the false persona, professes a common interest in migrant labor laws and in activism. Thus, it might be conceived as a kind of affinity scam. Ransomware continues its predictable evolution. Observers note that the extortionists' preferred target sets are becoming better defined. They're focusing their attentions on what are being called high-value targets, but these would be better characterized as high-payoff targets, those most likely to pay: governments, healthcare, and small businesses. In industry news, or more accurately in industry rumor, Google is thought to be shopping for Indian cybersecurity companies. And in legal news, former NSA contractor Hal Martin has pled not guilty to charges he purloined, stashed, and hoarded highly classified information. The probable lines of his defense have yet to emerge, but it seems significant that although charged under the U.S. Espionage Act, he wasn't charged with espionage as such. Some quick notes on RSA as the conference reaches its midpoint. According to experts on the technical, operational, and political aspects of the matter, nation-state operations in cyberspace are expected to increase. Those operations are expected to include espionage, information and influence operations, destruction or disabling of systems and data, and more complete integration with kinetic military operations. Nation-states are also expected to become coyer about how they conduct such operations. The pullback some observers say they see isn't conciliatory. Rather, it's a sign that states are increasingly turning to non-state actors, especially criminal groups, or front organizations. The goal isn't good world citizenship, still less peace. Rather, it's plausible deniability. Some speakers have expressed cautious optimism about Western states' growing ability and resolution to act effectively against cyber challenges, but no one thinks it's going to be easy. Security products go through natural life cycles, and today's protection might not work against tomorrow's threats. But there can be non-technical barriers to making a change. Steve Grobman is Chief Technology Officer for Intel Security.
There's a psychological challenge with the products, and what that is if you think about the way that technology typically operates in an environment, it's most effective when it's first installed. And because of that, there is often a motivation for security operations to choose and deploy a particular technology into their environment. But once adversaries figure out how to evade it or create countermeasures, it often doesn't work nearly as effective. However, there's this psychological issue where the same principals who have advocated for bringing the technology in-house would need to be the ones to very quickly turn around and say it's actually not working, and the right thing to do to maximize return on efficacy for our environment would be to remove it. That's very difficult for a lot of peoples and managers to say, although I recommended doing a full deployment into our organization last year, this year I'm recommending we remove that. And that's one of the reasons we're advocating taking a platform-based approach where you're looking at technologies that can much more easily be introduced into an environment and then optimized to have the right set of technologies operating in an enterprise. And that includes when things aren't as effective as they need to be from a value perspective. They can either be reduced in scope or very easily remove, and leaving that operations team with a high value, high intensity, high efficacy set of technology that remains in their environment.
That's Steve Grobman from Intel Security. For unsolved problems in various stages of solution, the biggest challenge still seems to be the false positive problem. Too many security teams continue to be overwhelmed with chattering alerts, and proliferation of point solutions isn't likely to help. The perimeter has clearly contracted to the endpoint, and maybe even to the user or to the app, and there are a number of interesting approaches to defense being offered and discussed. People continue to grapple with the security challenges posed by the Internet of Things, and there's a growing appreciation that the world of operational technology has needs that security, born and bred in the world of information technology, just might not be up to meeting.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire Daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire.
And I'm pleased to be joined once again by Ben Yellen. He's a senior law and policy analyst at the University of Maryland Center for Health and Homeland Security. Ben, you know, as we make the transition to the new presidential administration, I think a lot of people are looking back to President Obama's legacy when it comes to civil liberties in the cyber domain. He's received a good bit of criticism when it comes to that.
Yeah, so I think a lot of people on the left of center side for the past 8 years during the Obama administration, there were a group of true believers, folks at The Intercept, the Glenn Greenwalds of the world, who had said things that, you know, despite his orientation as a liberal Democrat, he's been relatively aggressive in using the surveillance state to gain national security information, and people should be concerned about this. There were others on the center left who said, you know, he's Obama, we trust him, he's not going to abuse these channels. The problem is, once you create the tools, once you use the tools, they're going to get into the hands of people you're not comfortable with. And I think for those people on the center left, that would be the Donald Trump administration. And that's why I think so many civil liberties advocates were disappointed on January 12th when we found out that President Obama, in one of his last acts related to surveillance, had rolled back limits on the National Security Agency's surveillance operations. Previously, the agency would comb through the data and classify certain elements of the data before they send it to the 16 other government agencies that deal with intelligence. Due to the Obama administration's January 12th action, now the raw data collected by the National Security Agency goes directly to these other intelligence agencies. The positive side from the perspective of the administration is that it will be easier to find the needle in the haystack. You get that entire block of raw data. It goes to all the intelligence agencies. It's going to be much easier for one of them to find something that catches their eye, that can be a hint as to what a suspect is up to, what a known terror suspect is plotting. The negative aspect of it is that it can also reveal information from people who are perfectly innocent. It's more likely that amongst that raw data, you're going to have irrelevant information, information either unlawfully collected or incidentally collected.
I think the timing certainly did raise some eyebrows, but obviously the president was conscious of that. What are people on the other side saying? Is it a point that this is the president merely handing the next administration a better set of tools to do the jobs that they're tasked with?
I mean, I think, you know, every president who's come into office promising to curtail the power of the surveillance state gets into office, sees the awesome power that the surveillance state affords them, and realizes that they're responsible for preventing terrorist attacks. And I think that's exactly what happened with President Obama. He had come in as a critic of some of the Bush administration's surveillance practices, but by the end of his administration, he was a strong believer in some of these surveillance tools. Even though he signed the USA Freedom Act, he originally had been a supporter of the bulk metadata program to collect the metadata of phone calls from almost all domestic users. He had been a supporter of foreign intelligence surveillance operations. And I think, at least in his view, it significantly contributed to the lack of a substantial 9/11-style terrorist attack during his administration. So I think he genuinely believes that these tools are important to combat terror threats. And no matter who the next president is or not, I think knowing that these tools are valuable, he wanted to give that president at least the availability of these surveillance tools.
Ben Yellen, thanks for joining us.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its Zero Trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zerotrustAI. And that's the CyberWire. We are proudly produced in Maryland by our talented team of editors and producers. I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. And now, a word from our sponsor, SixthSense. SixthSense provides award-winning cloud-based automated endpoint and vulnerability management solutions to streamline IT and security operations. With its advanced platform, businesses gain complete visibility and control over their infrastructure, reducing IT and security risks and optimizing operational efficiency. With SixthSense, you'll get real-time alerts, risk-based vulnerability prioritization and remediations, and an intuitive automation and orchestration engine so you can focus on your core business goals, confident in the knowledge that your enterprise is secure, compliant, and running smoothly. To learn why enterprises choose SixthSense, visit SixthSense.com.